Thank you very much, amen. The, when I was a boy, my biggest treat was to ride pillion on the back of my dad's motorbike. And the biggest treat of all was to go eel fishing down the North Kent marshes. And if anybody's ever read the opening page of Great Expectations, you'll know what a wild and wonderful place that was in the 1850s. But even in the late 1950s and early 60s, it was quite a wild place. So this is a little piece that I wrote to the memory of my late father. It's called 1961. Had a dream, standing by the tide, watching the boats at my father's side. Worked the river, fished the fens, near the mud banks of the River Thames. Father and son, 1961. His voyage over, mine just begun. By waving reeds and willow trees, a crimson sky and a summer breeze, unfurl that sail, cast that line, where memories reach back through time. Don't disappear, I need you here, your loving rhyme is in my mind. There's more to say, always more to share. Let's talk all day, show that we care. Father and son, 1961, his voyage over, mine just begun. Hear the curlew and the heron call, above the mud where footprints fall. Eyes look up, star on high, together now with a moonlit sky. A page is turned, a bridge is burned, nostalgia fans a memory. Happy days by a riverside, a man and boy and a turning tide. Sing from the pier, wind in our hair, life is a song we both can share. It can't be touched, it can't be seen, but I was there, I'm just 15. Caught a fish, made a wish, on a journey shared with one who cared, to show the way and to confide, so proud to be just by his side, father and son. 1961, his voyage over, mine just begun. I left school 2 weeks after my 15th birthday and I went to work for a man in central London, and every Friday night at 5:30 he'd give me a little brown envelope full of pound shillings and pence, and I used to spend most of the money on cigarettes. With plumber's mates and woodbine, sweet Aston and Park Drive, 20 Caston full strength, lucky to be alive. Rolling up Sun Valley, Old Hoban, strong and sweet, risen the red in a box of swan, a smoker's life complete. Smoking down in Stockwell, puffing up Park Lane, rolling face down Regent Street to Leicester Square again. Until my head was spinning, to London I had come, immature and innocent. In 1961, when sixpence was a tanner, a shilling was a bob, 12 coppers to a shilling, I had a handy job, oh how my pockets jingled, no credit cards were found, 5 florins to a 10 bob note and 8 half crowns a pound, 8 half crowns a pound. Walking back to happiness, happy birthday sweet 16, jiving at the 100 club when trad jazz was the scene, coffee at the Two Eyes, old Compton Street my home. Heaven and hell, the macabre as well, I soon found where to roam. Down Windmill Street to the circus, up Greek Street to the square. Soho was my playground, a lad without a care. In a suit from Berwick Market that only cost £5, with drainpipe pants and Cuban heels I really got around. In a pair of Winkle pickers I'd often stand and stare, reflective in shop windows, combing brill creamed hair. When sixpence was a tanner, a shilling was a bob, 12 coppers to a shilling, I had a handy job. Oh, how my pockets jingled, no credit cards were found, 5 florins to a 10 bob note, and 8 half crowns a pound. Dave Brubeck at the Marquee, Alexis playing blues, the troubadour in Chelsea, so many gigs to choose. All night at the Flamingo to see young Georgie Fame, singing at the keyboard while I played my teenage game. When Doreen was a dancer who came from Canning Town, she thought I looked artistic, I thought she'd been around. I used to go and see her down the Sunset Strip, my innocence soon ended when she let her guard to slip. When sixpence was a tanner, a shilling was a bob, 12 coppers to a shilling, I had a handy job. Oh, how my pockets jingled, no credit cards were found. 5 florins to a 10 bob note. An 8 half-crowns a pound. There's a short poem from my bedsitter days. I had a bedsit once. It was so cold, I used to have to go to the laundrette down the road to sit there and read the magazines and warm up a bit before I went back. And this is a poem called Laundrette. It's not really about a laundrette, really. It's about communication, or lack of communication. Behind the goldfish bowl, my green pyjamas revolve like public museum pieces. In the rainy Sunday afternoon laundrette, boredom is my companion. At least it's warm in here and I have a plastic seat. In fact, it could be quite nice if the machines were not so noisy. My visits are becoming a ritual, like visiting a sick friend in hospital. I sit before my machine, holding washing powder as though it were a bunch of grapes. We are all visitors and no one is speaking. Staring blankly at nothing, we are all too polite to peep into each other's goldfish bowl. The poem I wrote thinking about my grandmother. I, for years and years and years, and I'm sure most of you do as well, writing poetry, we all carry little notebooks around in our inside pockets, and I'm exactly the same as everybody else. Little notebooks, scribble, scribble, scribble. Because if an idea comes and you don't write it down, it's gone so quickly. So for years I've been carrying a notebook. And I wrote this next poem sitting on the top of a red London bus a few years ago. And I was on top of this bus and it was diverted down this little narrow side street. There must have been roadworks. And I caught the name of this road and it said Francis Street, SE18. And it was the street that my grandmother used to live in the early 1950s. And suddenly all these boyhood memories came flooding back. But instead of little terraced houses, it was just skyscrapers everywhere. So I there and then wrote this poem. And we used to affectionately call our grandmother Nana, so the poem is called Hey Nana. Hey Nana, this is where you used to live in 1953. We had a street party for the coronation and you carried out all your brown wooden chairs. Victor the lodger ate his dinner on the settee while I sat next to the cake in the middle of the street and didn't get any. One by one they knocked the old houses down. Then it was your turn, with rats running everywhere, screaming their heads off as you chased them with kettles of scalding water. Now I know why we won the war. I could hear the stout bottles clinking in your big black shopping bag as we climbed all those stairs to your new flat overlooking Woolwich Dockyard. Hey Nana, did you know a golden halo appeared above your hairnet the moment you closed your eyes and your teeth fell out forever? Mum lit a nightlight after she'd laid you out while Dad telephoned the doctor and the co-op. We found 88 pint bottles of Guinness in the cupboard under the sink, all as empty as your post office savings book. We buried you down the same hole as the two husbands you outlived by 30 and 35 years. And when the vicar threw in a handful of dirt, Uncle Fred tossed in your old bottle opener and began to cry. Hey Nana, so did I, so did I. In this office, and I used to go to lunch at the cheapest restaurant I could find, which was Tony's Cap in Shepherd's Market. And Shepherd's Market was a little mini kind of red light district, and I used to sit in the upstairs dining room of Tony's Cap having my egg and chips and the apple pie and custard and dishing out my 3 shilling luncheon voucher. And across the road in this little narrow mews was an open doorway, and the open doorway had a handwritten sign pinned up in the doorway and said French model, second floor. And thinking about it, I wrote this poem called Sign. The sign said model, second floor. Is she really a model or perhaps a whore? The hall looks scruffy, the paper peeling. There are rings of mildew all over the ceiling. He climbs the stairs that creak with his weight. Another old fool taking the bait. The young French model on the second floor looks as ancient as the stranger who stands at her door. And as the ritual act takes place, she reads disappointment in the lines on his face. And he reads boredom through mascara and paint. If not for the money, she could be a saint. Who knows? But age has written his story in a life of frustration and shame. And he still feels just as lonely walking back home through the rain. There's a page of brown shoes, and it's about getting a new pair of shoes when I was a boy. When I was a boy growing up in the early 1950s, there were still loads of bomb sites around southeast London, and I have this memory of walking across this bomb site to go to this shoe shop. On the anniversary of my birth, I go back over 50 years and remember my late father taking my hand and bringing me to Mr. Hannigan's shoe shop, Power Street, Woolwich, 1953, the year the Queen was crowned, the year Everest was climbed, the year we installed a 9-inch black and white television, the year of our first caravan holiday to Dymchurch, where grey bats flew across the dark evening marshes, and the sea went all the way to France. Though the war had been over for 8 years, barbed wire and gun emplacements still littered the long shingle beaches, and the city bomb site still remained. Tombstones to that sad conflict. In Power Street, the scattered bricks were everywhere. Bleached skeletons long removed, but ghosts still lingering, as Dad told of shattered lives and what we lose when anger fills the hearts of men. I held his warm hand and walked in new brown shoes across scattered bricks on the afternoon of my 7th birthday. Called Girl in a Window. I worked in a narrow street off of Fleet Street in a house, and I shared an office with a boy who was a bit of an alcoholic. He always used to keep a bottle of red wine in the top drawer of his filing cabinet. And we both fancied a girl who worked in the office across the road. It was the Reuters building. And the house we worked in was so old it had a blue plaque outside saying Samuel Pepys lived here. So I fancied this girl across the road, and I wrote this poem for Girl in the Window. Salisbury Court, Fleet Street, the abode of Samuel Pepys. My home for a while, in 64, an 18-year-old clerk running around the city streets, much as Samuel had done 300 years before. Chasing pretty girls and eating salt beef rolls in alleyway pubs. My first floor window looked across a narrow space to another window, in which a beautiful girl sat typing all day from 9 to 5. She had long dark hair and the proud looks of a flamenco dancer. I sat at my desk, surrounded by legal documents, and tried my best to work while slowly falling in love. She knew I was looking, but was careful not to let our eyes connect. I hated my helpless glances, drawn through the dusty panes towards her beauty. I turned my desk around, piled files high on the sill, but alas, I still found my eyes straying over the barricades to no man's land. Then, one Christmas Eve, full of wine, I dressed myself in a barrister's wig and gown and marched around that small empty room, delivering a strange speech to a fictitious jury and waving my arms like a windmill in a storm. From the corner of my eye, I could see that the beautiful girl had left her desk and was standing at her window, laughing. I waved and blew her a kiss.
You did.
She moved her hand to her lips, and across that empty space her sweet kiss flew in return. With a love that stole my heart in a season of goodwill, as the pale sun sank that evening behind Ludgate Hill, behind Ludgate Hill. Thank you. sequel to that poem because I wrote my telephone number and office extension on the big piece of white blotting paper and I held it up to the window and she telephoned me and I said, "You're really beautiful, will you meet me for a cup of coffee after work?" And she said, "How old are you?" I said, 18. She said, "Well, I'm 25. She said, "Besides, I'm meeting my boyfriend later." I said, "Bring him, he can pay for the coffee." She said, "He'd make mincemeat of you as a professional boxer." But just then, one of the typists came in, it was Christmas Eve, and one of the typists came in from downstairs. She said, "Quick, you're missing the party. We're having an office party downstairs." So we went downstairs, and on the way downstairs, she said, get me some gaff paper from the stationery cupboard. And that's when Janet Corner be in the stationery cupboard. Christmas Eve, just before 6. She was full of Bacardi. And I was full of lust. An anemic office boy with pimples full of pus. But in the darkness she didn't seem to mind. Even when I held her behind in my sweaty hand, I only came looking for some false gap. "You're in my little trap," said Janet, breathless between kisses, French and wet. Though I knew I'd never get any further than my tongue between her teeth, which was really rather a relief, with her fiancé waiting at reception, and him a 12-stone lighterman from Tilbury with a forest of hair growing from his ears, and me an underweight, asthmatic little chap who only went looking for a ream of false gap. When I first came to Ireland, I caught the Innisfallon from Swansea to Cork, and I hitchhiked down to West Kerry, and I went across to Great Blasket Island. I'd read The Island Ban and some of the other books, and so I really wanted to go out there. And over 35 years ago, you got the men, the old men in their boats to row you out, and it was really a marvellous day that I first went out there, because the sea was like a mill pond, which is really unusual. And I had it down Great Blasket, and I wrote a poem called Great Blasket, and years later, I was on Slayhead one winter's night, and there was a full moon, and I wrote another poem called Dark Island. So I'd like to link the two, written years apart. Because when I first went out to the island, it was like I was escaping reality for a few hours. It was a wonderful feeling. And the last fingers of the land reached out to catch us, but for a few hours we couldn't be touched, except by the sun and the voices of fishermen, their calfskin canoes almost too fragile to dance the surf, and their weather-beaten faces cracked like old parchment. One old man had eyes quick and bright like the sun on the sea. He knew the tides and the feeding grounds, and we watched as he made his current dance. He was like a boy dressed in old man's clothes. The last fingers of the land reached out, but he had never been touched. I'm watching the dark island in the moonlight's gentle glow, from these scented heather cliffs to the ocean far below. I see the spirits of those folk who lived there long ago. Their ancient hearts are beating with the tide's eternal flow. Slayhead in the shadows, Mount Eagle high above, and I alone in solitude in the landscape that I love. Empty hillside dwellings, a shattered window frame, tombstones from another time are all that here remain. Beside the restless ocean, beneath the flying sky. Our island home is empty, I hear the spirits sigh. No more the running children, no more of stories told. The chimney now is smokeless, the hearth is chill and cold. But patiently I'm waiting as purple lupins blow, while the spirits tell me stories of their struggle long ago. Down to the sea with nets and lines, the menfolk went each day. Our patient wives and widows would work and kneel and pray. To bring them safely home again, the currors skimming flows upon the high white horses with silver at their toes, silver at their toes. Slayhead in the shadows, Mount Eagle high above, and I alone in solitude in the landscape that I love. mentioned that I sang the Ballad of Tom Green, so I'll recite the lyrics to you. My interest in Antarctica began when I was 10 years old. My late father brought me up to central London, where Scott's ship, the Discovery, used to be berthed. On the embankment on the River Thames, it's now in Dundee, where it was built. And but back in the 1950s, it was on the embankment between Waterloo Bridge and Hungerford Bridge. And my father brought us on the Discovery, and he took us down below decks to the wardroom, and he showed us Captain Scott's cabin and Shackleton's cabin, and told us all the stories. And that's when my interest started. And it was only in the year 2000 that I wrote The Ballad of Tom Green, after reading Michael Smith's wonderful book, The Unsung Hero. But it's preceded by another short poem. I was thinking, he had three daughters, and one daughter died in infancy. So I wrote a piece called Daddy Will You Tell Us. Daddy, will you tell us what you did when you were young? Your hair has turned to silver, but your smile shines like the sun. Were your days with laughter filled, or did the salt tears flow when you sailed with Scott and Shackleton to the ice so long ago? He lit his pipe and took our hands. We walked by hillside steep to the graveyard by the river, where our sister lies asleep. Come sit with me a while, my girls, for my memory is clear. It only seems like yesterday that I was sailing there. It's cold and bleak and beautiful beyond the frozen sea, where an icy wind is calling across my memory of the men I met and helped to cross hard journeys on the ice, with those who lived to tell the tale and those who paid the price. I met those men in Littleton at the age of 24, when a lad jumped ship and ran away. I was a volunteer to transfer from my cozy berth to where the blizzard screams, but my eyes were keen to see those lands where none had ever been. Cold and bleak and beautiful beyond the frozen sea, where an icy wind is calling across my memory of the men I met and helped to cross hard journeys on the ice, with those who lived to tell the tale and those who paid the price. But with you, my lovely daughters, I'm content to stay at home. My navy days are over now. I have no wish to roam. I'll stay here where the fuchsia blooms by the Alder School's clear flow, to sit back in contentment, watch my daughters grow. It's good to go away, my girls, but it's nice to hear the sound of those who love and cherish you, with neighbours calling round. I'll shake the hand of any man from here to that icy hell, but I'd rather be in the South Pole Inn with my two girls and now. He ran away to join the Navy when he was just 15, a farmer's son from Alder School, the tough and brave Tom Green. Now the unsung hero who sailed with Captain Scott on a doomed attempt to reach the pole to explore that frozen flock. It was Crean who found Scott's body frozen where he slept. He built a cairn upon the man, said his prayers and wept. With Shackleton he sailed again to chart the icy waste. Upon the ship Endurance an icy hell he faced. Frozen in the ocean, the vice of winter fell. He made it to the island down that glacier of hell, to tell the story of the men stranded far from home, the whalers at South Georgia crossed the savage foam, to reach the men who waited long months, it is told, sheltering in upturned boats upon the beach so cold, eating seal and penguin, seaweed from the shore, never ever knowing if they would see their homes once more. He ran away to join the Navy when he was just 15, the farmer's son from Alder School, the tough and brave Tom Green. With Shackleton he bravely sailed to rescue every man, a kind and loyal friend to all, this cheerful-hearted man. With a song to help the weary, a tune to lift the sad, always optimistic, this happy sailor lad. For without a tough man's courage, determination too, things could have looked so different for that sad and stranded crew. Yet the James Caird made South Georgia, mountain peaks were climbed, relief was quickly organised for the poor souls left behind. But he came home and fell in love, a local girl who went to South Pole Inn he opened to pull black pints instead. A father of three daughters, Mary, Kate, Eileen, though he left this world at 61, his deeds live on, Tom Green. Though he left this world at 61, Steve Devon, Tom Green. I gave up smoking and I saved up my money when I was a boy and I bought a motor scooter. So this is a piece called Smarties. At 17 I was a mod, loved the Kinks, the Who and Rod. Drove my Vespa down Cheapside, all the girls screamed for a ride. Levi jeans, Ben Sherman shirts, chatting girls in miniskirts. Down King's Road in shoes of suede, ever impatient to get laid. Frothy coffee, pinball games, Townsend sang, I can't explain. Jukebox with the volume high, Friday night up west we fly. High on blues, then coming down, dancing close to Tamla Motown. Getting drunk at all night parties, popping pills like they were Smarties. Popping pills like they were Smarties. Doing wheelies at Waterloo, after work I'd wait for you. Off to Brighton feeling free, candy floss and a sunset sea. Wearing parkas along the prom, summertime the air was warm. Sleeping under the midnight pier, bag of chips and a can of beer. High on blues then coming down, dancing close to Tamla Motown. Getting drunk at all night parties, popping pills like they were Smarties. You studied drama up the Strand, at 1 o'clock I held your hand. To Lion's Corner House we flew, cheese on toast and tea for two. I always loved the clothes you wore, the perfect image of Sandy Shaw. You walked around devoid of shoes, then dumped me for a fella in the moody blues. He picked you up in his MGB, on the town for a spending spree. Whiskey and coke in Chelsea pub, backstage past all the trendy clubs. High on blues, then coming down, dancing close to Tamla Motel. Getting drunk at all-night parties, popping pills like they were Smarties. In Polaroids I rode around, looking cool in London town, singing, wherever we'll be, plenty of spare fish in the sea. Meeting dates on Bond Street Station, talking about my generation. The year was 1964, when all the girls looked like Sandy Shaw. High on blues then coming down, dancing close to Tamla Motown. Getting drunk at all night parties, popping pills like they were Smarties. Popping pills like they were Smarties. Thanks very much for listening. I'll just finish off with one more piece. And I'm delighted Patrick Cotter's here tonight, because Patrick Cotter first published this next poem. It's called My Love Told Revolutionary Newspapers, and thank you, Patrick. And this poem was picked up last year by a book called Aflame Books, and published in an anthology called Che in Verse, and this is the book. And I'm really amazed to be in this collection, because it includes people like Allen Ginsberg and Lawrence Ferlinghetti and Pablo Neruda.
You read some of that, do you?
So, we'll ask him.
Oh.
He's dead now.
Anyway. If you can bring it back, we'll
bring it back. Anyway, thank you for listening, and I'll finish off with this, My Unsold Revolution newspaper. And it's about the time, 1968, America was bombing North Vietnam, and we all got behind this student leader called Tariq Ali, and we marched up Charing Cross Road and along Oxford Street and down into Grosvenor Square, and we went to the American embassy and asked them kindly if they'd stop bombing North Vietnam, but they didn't listen to us. It went down in the history books as the Grosvenor Square riots. And I was going out with a girl at the time who sold anarchist newspapers in central London, but she dumped me. She dumped me for a fellow with a bigger personality. before she dumped me for this fellow with a bigger personality, we went on this protest march, and the rest is history.
But with the bigger dumping, why is that?
I once loved a girl who sold revolutionary newspapers in Charing Cross Road. Her red nipple-tight t-shirt sang the praises of Che Guevara as we linked arms and marched with thousands on Grosvenor Square. She was brave when the police charged, fearless when the stones flew, valiant among the legs of galloping horses. They fined me £20 for disturbing the peace, and the only peace I wished to disturb was hers. I'm going to Cuba, she said, but ended up in Catford with a Bangladeshi bus conductor and a 10th floor balcony full of nappies. My love, who sold revolutionary newspapers, Lyndon Johnson in the White House, Ho Chi Minh in power. Bombs fall on Vietnam, kids in Grosvenor Square. On a Sunday once in Mayfair, blood began to flow. Cops broke bones and kicked through stones. 40 years ago. So we'll follow Tariq Ali as he leads the way, because we don't want no more bombs in Vietnam today. Me lie in the papers, we express our views. Stones are thrown in Mayfair, it's on the evening news. Cops are standing in a line, batons in their hands. Innocence begins to die with those in Vietnam. So we'll follow Tariq Ali as he leads the way, because we don't want no more bombs in Vietnam today. I hear the whistle blowing, I see the horses charge. USA, get out today, the words are written large. For a teenage boy in Mayfair, life is very sad. As he looks above the crowd, there flies a democratic flag. So we'll follow Tariq Ali as he leads the way, because we don't want no more bombs in Vietnam today. I once loved a girl who sold revolutionary newspapers in Charing Cross Road. Her red nipple-tight t-shirt sang the praises of Che Guevara. As we linked arms and marched with thousands on Grosvenor Square, she was brave when the police charged, fearless when the stones flew, valiant among the legs of galloping horses. They fined me £20 for disturbing the peace, and the only peace I wish to disturb was hers. Thank you very much.